and welcome to OSW Review, presented in glorious grapple vision and encoded in blast processing. We chronologically critique the FIA Formula One World Championship. Oh God, help us all. Welcome to Motorsport 101.
You are the world champion!
Let the record show that that was King's idea. Welcome to episode 129 of the Motorsport 101 podcast. I am your friendly neighbored host, Mr. Andre Harrison, and F1's back, everybody!
Hooray!
I guess. You know, that's nice and all. Congratulations, kids. This is the shortest set list in the history of the Motorsport 101 podcast. We're just going to be talking about an F1 race. How much do you want to bet this? How much do you want to bet this still goes 2 hours?
Yeah, because we got a lot to talk about. Dre just didn't write it down.
Yeah, listen. Like, I am minimalist. Like, I'm sure there is room for branching path and discussion on this show. Like, we're nuanced and professional like that. But, hey, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. We have, oh my god, 5 people on this show. Again, Jesus, we're getting bigger by the week. We're going to have to start building like a new conservatory in the back for Zoe. And the sin bin, of course. But let's give it...
Why am I getting kicked out?
You know exactly why you're getting kicked out. You see...
Dre, you better not leave that to interpretation for the audience, because they're just going to go just next thing you know, there are going to be people out for us because...
They're going to make up conspiracy theories about how we're angling to get a better deal on some other podcast network.
Listen, there is no reason to believe that motorsport.com will not buy us out if we sacrifice Zoe to the Greek gods. It's all the plan.
As long as I can have onion rings as I go.
Okay, now, this discussion came up on Twitter about over the weekend, like sometime after the race. Dre, you've said you're not a big fan of onions.
I've never had an onion ring in my life, and I'm 26 in August.
That's entirely understandable. I went through a phase where I actually liked onion rings, and then for a while I just hated onions. Did not want to eat onions at all, and now I've just settled into onions. Onions are fine.
Why did I get torched for this take? This is what I don't understand. It's like... I was like...
Because do you not like onions, period, in any food at all?
No.
Okay, see, I see why I got torched for that.
The thing was, if you hadn't mentioned you'd never had onion rings in the conversation, it probably no one would have batted an eye.
Yeah, and I got criticised by a person who's a good friend of ours who eats raw potatoes, and I get torched. I get torched for never having an onion ring in my life. What sense does this make?
I didn't know we were good friends with Nico Rosberg now.
Does Nico Rosberg eat raw potatoes?
Oh, that was like his pre-race thing, like a couple years back.
Oh, God. See...
Oh, if you only knew the movies
understand.
I haven't seen.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Motorsport 101 podcast, where we talk about my strange eating habits before we talk about Formula One. Don't you love this show?
We haven't even gotten through the introductions
exactly.
yet.
Exactly!
No, we haven't. And Kevin Harvick, as we are recording, is 100 laps away from getting everybody a free Bloomin' Onion at Outback.
There is no escape. oh, God. Let's introduce the 5-person panel on this week's episode. Of course, with me, as usual, is Mr. Ryan King.
Well, I'm Jay Hunter. What are you talking about?
Yes, you're about as Irish as I am. Now, from some other part of Ireland, clearly, RJ O'Connell. He's got the name down already, clearly.
My biggest gripe here is that, well, yes, Tiger Woods did make several contributions and was a landmark player in golf for from about 1997 to 2008. What is the deal with not having Serena Williams higher up on this list? She should have easily been top three, if not number one.
Right. I did see that ESPN list of most dominant athletes of all time. And, like, I wanted to comment on it, but then I saw Colin Cowherd put Floyd Mayweather at number one, and I was like, oh, just fuck off. And she's like, I was just like, fuck this discussion.
What is Colin doesn't even work for ESPN anymore.
But of course he had to throw in his two cents, because, you know, Mr. Hot Take himself. But I was like, Barry Bonds was like 17th, and I stopped taking that list seriously because, like, Brady was 20th, and Peyton Manning was like number two. And I was like,
you also need to know that it's the most dominant athletes over the last 20 years, so maybe that's...
That changes nothing! Like,
that doesn't include, like, half of Barry Bonds' career.
Yo, Michael Schumacher. Yo, Michael Schumacher got 7th. I was surprised he even made the list.
Yeah, I was surprised he made the list.
Research who he was.
It's relevant now. Like, ESPN's now had to embrace F1 as part of its culture, so now it's like, hey, we'll mention Formula 1 for the first time, like, ever.
Ooh! Boy, and me and King have got some stories to tell you on that.
More on that later. Also, as usual, we have Zoe Hamilton on the show. Hello, Zoe.
Yes, from my space in the conservatory, where apparently I now belong.
Yes, yes. Consider it an upgrade from the sin bin. You're welcome. And we have coming back and not talking about IndyCar for once. It's Chris DeHarnay. Hello, sir.
ESP, if there was ever such a thing as chloroform in motorsports broadcasting, I'd have to say the ESPN feed of the last F1 race was it.
Yeah, if the boot fits, as they say. If the boot fits. Some general housekeeping to get out of the way. We are on youtube.com/motorsport101. A new Dre brief went up this week. Hooray! Talking about IndyCar. That was fun. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. What was it, 101? We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. And if you want to follow us personally, we are at Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, at RJ O'Connell, at WeeZoe, and at C the Harde. That's DeHarde. I know it's a tricky one via the audio platform, but we do our best here. And if you really, really like us, you can back us on Patreon at patreon.com/Nogger University. Oh, no, wait, it's Motorsport101. That's the one. $5 gets you early access to both this show and Bike Live, which, again, if you haven't seen episode 51 already that went live this past Sunday, do it! It is a fantastic review of all of the first weekend's action in Qatar as Dovia Marquez went to war once again. It's a good time for all involved. Check it out again later this week for episode 52, where we will talk about World Superbikes in Thailand as Jonathan Rea and Chaz Davis split wins. Eugene Laverty got run over. Luckily, he's probably going to be okay, thank Christ. And all the action that came out of Thailand. It's a good time for all involved. Me and Lewis are going to be checking that out later this week. Don't forget, again, for that $5 early access and $10, you can listen to all these Motorsport 101 recordings as they happen, because, you know, that's always fun. you can hear about my strange habits of not eating onion rings. Well worth the money, if you ask me. Right. Without further ado, during this brief musical interlude, we'll get into the Formula One Grand Prix in Australia, which, wait, Lewis Hamilton didn't win? And we're back, and, like, King.
Congratulations, Mercedes fans. Lewis Hamilton has not won the 2018 Australian Grand Prix. The four-time world champion Hamilton
Vettel
drove an excellent race to begin his pursuit of his fifth World Drivers Championship. And now you can celebrate like Toto Wolff and the rest of the Mercedes crew with the same t-shirt that they were not wearing in the garage after the race. This commemorative t-shirt is now available online and at all major retailers,
thrift shops, and charitable organizations.
Or by dialing 1-888-KL5 32-26. And we'll see you in Bahrain.
Forza Ferrari.
There seems to be, like, one awful mistake here. It apparently says that Sebastian Vettel won the Grand Prix. This has to be some sort of practical joke, right?
No, that no. Definitely did happen.
It's real. It's real. Your narcotic is back in the fridge.
It's back in the fridge if you want it.
You know, it's like, I love that, like, Sebastian Vettel won the Grand Prix, and then I immediately got, like, 4 tweets from people, like, talking about, like, Dre, apologize, what, for me not having a ton of faith in Sebastian and the Ferrari team this year? It's like, I still find it incredible that this Ferrari bunch is just so goddamn hopeful. It's funny to me. yeah, Seb did somehow win. Controversial and having... Yeah, he did win it, and I was like, oh, wait, isn't that a nice surprise? We can delay the inevitable for, like, a whole 2 weeks. Because, I mean, RJ, if you looked at it through the lens of qualifying, like, you probably wouldn't be surprised to think that, you know, Hamilton's probably going to drop off into the distance.
Right. This was very much looking like a form book race. We didn't have a whole lot of excitement in qualifying apart from Valtteri Bottas clipping the inside of turn two, dropping 2 wheels off in the grass, just enough to get him his car totaled.
Yeah,
into
wrecked.
Yeah, absolutely wrecked. Before that, the most drama you had was Daniel Ricciardo's 3-place grid penalty for... Was he going too fast under a red light, or was he going too slow, or was he going too slow but not quickly enough? I
think it was too fast. I think he was over the delta. Which I love that. Which I love that Ted Kravitz was like, "No, we can't do this. It will take a home guy out of contention for the win." And I'm like, "Ted, that's the rules."
Yes, officer. Before you pull me over for doing a 75 and a 45, let's just consider the bigger picture here.
Oh no!
Yes, and if you look at it through the lens of qualifying, where Lewis Hamilton not only breaks the track record, he crushes it. He had a 21-1. That first sector was magic. So of course he puts it on pole. And
by 0.6.
Well. Oh, goodness. Yeah, starts on pole by 0.6 seconds, takes the lap record by a full second almost. You got to think, like, okay, if he gets a clean start, which he did, he's going to lead... not just the majority of this race, he's probably just going to make this a block.
I seriously threw my cap at my television screen. I was just getting ready to go to work because it was like 6:30 in the morning when this happened. And I was just like, I saw that lap, he crossed the line, I immediately threw my cap at the TV and I left the house. I was just like, fuck this. And I was like, okay, that ain't getting beaten, we're out of here. Let's beat the traffic, yo. We're getting the hell up out of here. Oh, dear. But, yeah, it looked like Lewis was going to walk away with this one. Probably be in a different postcode, getting ready for Bahrain by the time the rest of the field finished. Start happens. Hamilton takes a bit of early pressure from Kimi Raikkonen, who tried an audacious move around the outside of turn two. Didn't quite work. Shout out to Kevin Magnussen, who pulled off a blinder going around the outside of Verstappen around turn one for fourth place. God. That was a beauty from K-Mag. About time he got one of those, right? Yeah, brilliant stuff from Kevin Magnussen there. But the key moment in the race was got early going. It was about lap 23 or so. They bought, like, Ferrari, who had Raikkonen running in a comfortable second, but starting to lose more time to Hamilton, about 3.5 seconds by the time the first round of stops came around. They boxed Raikkonen early, so that pretty much forced Mercedes to box Hamilton the lap afterwards.
Yeah, they got him to bite. And, and of course, any hope of a two-stop race? Ooh, that was way out the window.
This is Pirelli we're talking about here, RJ. They don't do aggressive strategies.
And when we do, we complain that they make the tires too soft. So we tell them to make the tires too hard, and now they're too hard again. And this is why you never want to be a sole tire supplier.
No.
It's never worth it.
You can't win if you try here, kids. You just can't. It's not pretty. But, you know, they said before the race it was going to be a one-stopper, and I was like, oh, crap, not again. But, yeah, of course, Raikkonen, they put Raikkonen in first. Hamilton came in the lap afterwards. During that first round of stops, Haas, who, as we mentioned a little second ago, they were running an incredible fourth and fifth at the time. Kevin Magnussen running fourth, Grosjean in fifth, and next thing you know, they box Magnussen, and then he crawls to a halt in Sector 1 after they realise that one of his tyres was not properly attached.
The left rear wheel had not been attached because of a wheel gun failure.
What had happened was they had the wrong nut on, so they had cross-threading, so it didn't attach to the wheel.
Oh dear. And yeah, Magnussen crawls to a halt. He's out of the race from fourth place, which would have been, at the time, Haas's best ever finish to a Grand Prix, beating Grosjean's fifth from 2016 in Bahrain. But
don't worry, folks. Romain Grosjean's going to pick up the pieces. And oh my God, it happened again. Haas, what are you doing?
Oh.
Yep, it occurred again on Romain Grosjean's pit stop, where the front left tire was cross-threaded on.
And yet the worst part is the gunman knew it wasn't attached properly, and he was waving, don't release the car, don't release it. But by that point, it was too late. He had already gone. Grosjean parks the car on the inside of turn two, and because there was no runoff area or no escape road for the car, they had to pull out the virtual safety car. Remember that. It becomes important later. We've got to talk about Haas a little bit here on a sidetrack. What a devastating bit of luck for Magnussen and Grosjean, who, I mean, Haas were probably the biggest surprise of testing, seeing them right up there, and it was great to see that their pace was validated. I mean, as I said, Magnussen started from fifth on the grid, Grosjean right behind him. They look like they have the best of the rest car-wise at the moment, outside of the big three, which is a genuine shock.
Right, and you know, with those DNFs, you have to feel like those are crucial points in the battle for the Constructors' Championship. Like, yeah, you know, Haas are not going to win the Constructors' Championship, but they can make a solid play for fourth or fifth. Losing potentially 22 points all in the span of a few laps, and knowing that Haas has had trouble keeping up the development pace of their car, that's huge.
Oh, it's a hammer blow. That was cruel. I can't remember ever seeing a situation where both cars have had to retire in a race because of pit stop errors. And you get one every once in a while, but never both. That is just so awful. And
back to back.
Yeah, back to back within what, two laps of each other? Just.
Yeah.
You had one guy basically storm out of their garage.
Immediate gifable moment right there as the guy slams the door as Magnussen parks his car up. Poor man. And
then you had the bit which was quite good later on, where they showed you Roman basically going around the entire team, all the mechanics, and hugging and talking to them, and it's like,
Romain Grosjean is a good dude.
He is a good dude. props to Grosjean. He's a better man than me, because I know for a fact that would not be me. I'd be too upset. But that was a very classy gesture.
He is the guy who, when he started in F1, was still working as a banker.
That's a good point. Yeah, it is a good point. And he's come a long way, Grosjean, and I know people have ragged on him before for being a bit of a complainer, but it's nice to see he had a level of empathy for his team on that one. It happens, and it's a nice reminder that there is a human element in F1, and it goes so much deeper than just the drivers to have great performances in F1, and accidents happen, unfortunately. And, real shame for the Haas team there. They were fantastic all weekend. A real shame, because, again, they had both cars running in the top five, and that was just a rotten bit of luck. And that single-handedly pretty much brought Red Bull back into play for a podium. And as well as that, like, it bumped Fernando Alonso up into the top five. And, like, I had every Alonso stan in my mentions like, ha! We listened to you last week, Dre. What about him now? I'll get back to that in a minute. But,
what we told you that we told you that McLaren was going to be absolutely fine with Renault power. Don't go back and listen. We told you that.
Yeah.
Just trust our word on that.
Everything would be fine. We totally didn't say they'd finish like eighth.
Though we should use this time to talk about the first car that ended up in pit lane.
Indeed. Tell us more, King.
I believe it was Brendan Hartley's Toro Rosso Honda.
Oh, yes, he
smoking.
Locked it up, got a flat spot. They decided to put new tires on the car, but it really didn't matter. His race was compromised in 15th. And Pierre Gasly blew an engine. What's powering Toro Rosso this year?
Honda.
Do you remember how we all thought that Honda would seem to be okay here, the way the testing had gone and they were all ahead of schedule and everything looked rosy?
Again, we can cut back to the preview show where I said during testing, Toro Rosso was running modified versions of last year's Honda power.
Shut up, King!
Not this year's power.
Stop trying to add legitimacy to this show!
I think Sergei Sorokin's was the most devastating, not just because of the fact that he got a plastic flag stuck in his brakes 9 laps into his Formula One debut, and he's already under scrutiny for replacing Felipe Massa and not being Robert Kubica, but also the fact that it didn't have an actual sandwich in it. What's the point?
If you're going to ruin an F1 debut with a sandwich bag, at least make it a good bacon and egg one, you know? Like, geez, have a good sandwich. Like,
be creative, like the dude who threw a shoe at the track at Montreal.
like Danica.
I blame Charles Reginbald for that one. Like, that was clearly him that did that at Canada last year. Happy birthday, by the way, Charles, if you're listening. but, jeez, yeah. Oh, God. Sorokin, that was a bad one. Should we take a little touch to talk about Williams as well for a second here? Because it's never a good sign when Lance Stroll, who was the second last of all the remaining finishers on track, I think it was 14th place in the end for Stroll, says...
He got beat by Charles Leclerc.
You got beat by Charles Leclerc in the Sauber...
There's no shame in that.
No.
There's no shame in that, but the shame in that comes with the fact that Sauber have been perennial doormats in the championship, and Williams just came off a 5th place finish in the World Constructors' Championship.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And it did...
And Williams looked like they were okay in practice.
It didn't help there when Lance Stroll pretty much said that, like, we're surviving right now rather than racing. I think he pretty much implied that just getting to the checkered flag was an achievement in itself. Which is not a good sign if you're in that way. I mean, we were quite down on Williams in our season preview, but I don't think we realised just how bad it was in race trim. Like, finishing behind a Sauber is hashtag ungood, no matter which way you slice it. And
until proven otherwise, with all the investments that they're making, it's you don't want to be behind Alfa Romeo.
No. Because by all accounts, they look like the worst team in the grid. Marcus Ericsson had a DNF as well on that one. Power steering failure in his car put him out quite early on as well. Pretty much the same time, I think Brandon Hartley had a failure. It was pretty much like back-to-back with each other on that one. So, yeah, sad times.
Gasly's engine blew. Hartley had floor damage, so he wasn't really a factor. Let's get to the point where the race pivoted.
As I rub my hands together like Birdman. Right. So, as mentioned, when Grosjean's car conked out on the side of the road because there was no escape road on the turn to apex, we had a virtual safety car. No big deal, you know how VSC works by now. Turns out about 2 laps later we had a full safety car because of they had to get a crane on track to remove Grosjean's car. Awkward position and all that. Of course, Sebastian, who had not taken his first stop yet out of the leading group, compared to Hamilton and Raikkonen than you had. He pits during the safety car. Mercedes seemed to think that, you know, they'd have enough of a buffer where Hamilton would still come out in front. Turns out they didn't. They claim some sort of algorithm error or software bug miscalculated. And for the second year in a row in Australia, Vettel comes out in front of Hamilton after a round of pit stops. Oh boy. And the Vettel camp, me included, was like, oh shit, we can't believe our luck. It's happened again. sadly, no image of Toto Wolff fist banging the table in disgust this time round. But Vettel comes out in front at the end of the safety car period, which made the race interesting again for about 3 laps. But King, I mean, how do you break down this Mercedes glitch, shall we say?
I would say, yeah, it's an unfortunate thing to happen. To have your software, you know, tell you numbers that aren't 100% correct. But again, I'd like to default to Nico Rosberg's review of the race, where pretty much said that, yes, despite the software giving them a number that wasn't true, it was pretty much still down to Mercedes. Mercedes could have, you know, closed the gap to Vettel a bit more before the virtual safety car had come out. That pretty much, that they were, in his terms, Lewis was chilling. Like, literally, quote, he was chilling. Like, if they had pushed a bit more, if they had, you know, taken the initiative to ensure that the time gap was close enough, if the virtual safety car had come out, Lewis would have been ahead.
Yeah, apparently Sebastian Vettel gained like 5 seconds in the lap before he stopped, and that was the dagger, effectively, to essentially won Seb the Grand Prix. Go on, Zoe.
The thing was, before the start of the season, Nico said, if anyone was going to beat Lewis, they had to take advantage of his lulls, like the moments he makes mistakes. And him, Lewis thinking, like, relaxing like that was his mistake. Like, as far as Nico's concerned, if you're going to beat Lewis, you have to capitalize on every moment you can get.
Right.
Ferrari did that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny you mentioned that, because, like, we on this show have ragged on Ferrari on several occasions, and justifiably so, for, shall we say, strategical blunders. It's totally not led to me losing my head on several occasions on this show. See our YouTube channel for more on that. Tables were flipped, wardrobes were punched, etc. But, but this time, Ferrari got it on the nose. They really did. And I think a lot of that boils down to having 2 cars in the fight compared to Merckx only having 1. Valtteri Bottas did not have a good weekend. More on him in a bit. But let's just say he wasn't in this lead battle, to say the least. Let's have Raikkonen basically chase Hamilton in a straight dogfight while they had Vettel deliberately tail back during the end of his first stint. Before the safety car came out, Raikkonen was not going to win that dogfight with Hamilton straight up, but they didn't tell Raikkonen about what Vettel was doing until it was already too late. The plan was already in motion, and there is a hilarious team radio clip on the F1 YouTube channel where Raikkonen, basically the penny drops that he's been shafted here in this strategical call. And I love that, someone in the F1 social media team clearly saw the funny side, because it's the thumbnail, too, where it goes, and I quote, "Don't fuck me up with this." And that's exactly what happened. Oh, Kimmy.
Although, in fairness, he did hold off Daniel Ricciardo, who set the fastest lap of the race, trying to chase down his first home podium that he could actually keep. And to Raikkonen's credit, he held it. And not only did he hold it, he got to wear shades on the podium.
Yep, and avoided Vettel awkwardly spraying champagne in his face. Because, you know, anything with Kimi Raikkonen has to go viral these days because he's such a character. But, but yes, indeed, Raikkonen did hold on, did hold off to the very fast Daniel Ricciardo, who now, amazingly, is 0-5 for home podium attempts. I'm surprised at that, I really am. Obviously, 2014 probably still is a bit of a raw one for him. But, yeah, he did hold off the rampant Ricciardo right at the end. On that one again, like his fastest lap was a good half second quicker than anybody else's. I don't know where he pulled that one out from, but yeah, that was a fun one. But poor Raikkonen, it's a shame because Raikkonen had driven well all weekend. He out qualified Vettel, had good pace leading the charge of Ferrari. Again, second half of the race he wasn't quite so strong, but that was a good performance from Kimi. Not more of that, please. And Ferrari may just have half a chance at something. But, yeah, that's... So, we have the coolness of another Vettel versus Hamilton dogfight for the victory. And, King, we have to talk about that one funny moment where Lewis Hamilton pulls out the team radio, basically begging Mercedes to have a proper go at it, basically, to try and pass Seb for the win. And then Lewis basically takes matters into his own hands. Like, he tries to get a slow reply for it, and it's like, I mean, the words he says, I'm going to go for it.
Yeah. I timed it at 35 seconds from the point that Lewis Hamilton's radio message of I'm going for it was played on the world feed to the time where he locked it up going into turn number 8 and effectively cost himself the race.
Yeah. He was half a second away from Seb, coming up towards DRS zone number 2. More on that later. It's not where you think it is. But goes wide, goes across the grass on turn 9, and that effectively ended it, because by the time he got to around that 1.2, 1.3 second mark behind Seb again, they'd run out of gas. They knew that Hamilton wasn't going to win, and Hamilton effectively gave up the last 5 laps. Because Vettel ended up winning the race by about 5 seconds in the end. He was actually closer to Raikkonen than he was to Vettel at the end of the race. But I can't believe I'm saying this. I actually feel a little bit bad for Lewis on this one, because his pace was stunning. There is no other word to describe it. He was the fastest man around Australia this weekend, and it wasn't even close. He did absolutely nothing wrong. And he's coming home in second. For once, I actually was like, Lewis had every right to be in disbelief. That was the words he used, disbelief, after finishing in second, because he did not put a foot wrong, apart from that one lockup, really, the entire Grand Prix. And he should never have been behind Vettel at all, really. But, you know, got caught napping, and it's second place. So, guys, title fight? You know, Vettel Hamilton 2. Handshakes in the paddock and all that, you know?
At first, I was really, really dismissive of the fact that this would be a title fight. And I'm still a bit, but I think the fact that they're limited to 3 engines this year is really going to give it a real chance of being a title fight. That we ended up in a situation where everyone's handcuffed.
If you miss it late in the race, Lewis backed off to try and save the engine. Lewis insists this was an overheating problem. I could believe it, although the Mercedes is not saying anything. This had people up in arms because, oh my goodness, you have 2 of the best and they're not fighting all the way for the win because one of them has to save the engine. You do have to make sacrifices, and it is a long game.
Yes.
Wait until we get through the next 4 tracks at least. That's more indicative of what you'll see on the rest of the calendar.
Agreed.
AKA these are Mercedes tracks. You'll certainly get a lot more passing than you did this week.
Yeah, I as a quick sign though, I do feel like Merckx is going to open a can of whoop-ass in Bahrain next weekend. that is...
I wouldn't say so. Like, I'd say... Because, you know, Mercedes saved their engines. I don't know what Ferrari were doing, but they were clearly pushing to keep Lewis behind them.
they've got to make that power unit last 7 weekends. Like, that is, that's going to be quite the task. If we've seen in the history of these hybrid units, like, getting to 5 weekends can be tough with these, let alone 7.
Trust me, I've played a Formula One 2017 career mode.
Mm-hmm. The true measure of difficulty. getting through an engine, getting through a season with 4 is practically impossible. Take it from me. I've been in the same boat as RJ, and I know all about that shit. I also want to say as well, and of course, as a quick side note before we get into other stuff, props to Lewis for having the hashtag March for Our Lives on his helmet. I did not notice that until after the Grand Prix. It wasn't the nicest moment because he was zoomed in the cockpit after the race, after in Parc Fermé, after he parked up and realized, like, how on earth did I finish this race in second? It was on the front of his helmet, front end, which is a really nice touch. I don't think you need me to explain why that was so prominent. If you haven't seen why, go read my latest blog on the website about that. Anyway, talking about the overtaking issues, as mentioned, I mean, the guys that ran the numbers on this claimed there was 15 passes in this race. I think they may be stretching the truth a little bit on this one, because they included...
Because
yeah, go on, Roger.
What constitutes a pass? Well, anything that's after the first lap, so anything that's at racing speed, and you have to hold the position to the end of the lap. You can't just hold it until a sector or through a corner or anything like that. So any passes that are made after a standing start, understandably, those don't count. If somebody blows a clutch or something, they've basically done the work for you. Mm-hmm. But in the case of Max Verstappen going full on 360 drift coming out of turn two, that counts as a pass, even though, you know, Verstappen did most of the work for Ricciardo and Grosjean.
They counted that as 3 overtakes because he lost 3 positions off that spin. Is that really count as an overtake? I guess, but it's like, but King, it was too artificial.
It wasn't 2, it was 3. RS.
3
Yep.
We had a third DRS zone, and it didn't really do much. Apart from, like, Ricardo's dive bomb pass on Nico Hülkenberg early in the race, that was about it.
And if anything, Hülkenberg gave that one up too easy. I did spot that one, and I was like, Hülkenberg just gave up on the second corner afterwards. He could have just easily just braked a little bit later and just held the inside line, because there was no way Ricardo was making it all the way around. But, you know, it is what it is. Yeah, that was about the only relevant overtake that worth a damn where the other dude didn't make a mistake. Because again, they counted, for example, Carlos Sainz, who ran across the grass trying to hold off Fernando Alonso. And Alonso came through. But as mentioned, they added a third DRS zone for this weekend after turn 12, the run down between 12 and 13. Didn't really do anything. The straight's just too short, especially given they're coming out of turn 12 at like 130 as it is already. It just didn't really work out on this one. But at least I said it on Twitter that I like the fact that at least Liberty are aware it's a problem and are trying to do something about it. They know it's a band-aid because these cars are fundamentally buggered when it comes to being able to overtake each other. We've talked about this before. At least they're trying to do something, I guess, King?
Yeah, they acknowledge that it's an issue. But again, it's not going to be an immediate solution. We still have to wait till the current formula runs its course.
And that's in 2021. I hope you like another 3 seasons of this, guys. 3. Again, it's something. It's a band-aid. Like I said, it's a band-aid on a gaping head wound, but at least they're aware and they're trying. That's kind of half the battle here, and at least they're not tone-deaf like many of the last ownership when it comes to issues like this. I know people are going to complain that it's not quote-unquote natural enough, but...
Really? It's been so long.
Yeah, it's been 2000... Yeah, 7 seasons now with DRS. 7! This wasn't brought in overnight. Like,
man, DRS has lasted longer than most drivers' careers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. DRS has lasted more than active suspension had its run in F1, lasted longer than, you know, ground effects had their time in the late 70s, early 80s in Formula 1. Like, DRS is a staple of modern Formula 1 now.
Okay, let's play a fun game here. Quick guess. How many drivers in the 2010 championship are still active in F1 now? I'll give you a hint. There was 27 marked drivers that drove at least one race in Formula 1 that season. In fact, no one did less than three.
I will give you six.
Six.
Let's see.
No Googling.
Lewis. No, right. Lewis, Sebastian, Kimi, Fernando. First four.
Zoe, it's not as fun if you're sounding it out.
I can't think them.
King?
Roman.
Oh, God.
What, five?
I have no clue. Because I know what Kimi came back that season.
Okay, I'll give you the rundown.
We've got Romain Grosjean, Hosek, Magnussen? Magnussen started then?
No.
No, Magnussen's not been around that long.
Magnussen debuted in Magnussen debuted in 2013, I believe. No, it was actually 14.
Yeah, I'm still sticking for six.
Okay.
I've got five.
I'll say six.
Sebastian Vettel, Fernand was one.
Oh, Daniel Ricciardo.
No, because Daniel Ricciardo didn't take part in a race. He was...
Oh, it was only practice.
He was a test driver back then. So, okay, you're looking at Vettel?
Wait, no. Daniel Ricciardo did race. He was a mid-season replacement for Karthik Kane.
You're a year behind.
That was 2011.
That was 2011? Damn.
Yep. Here's the list. Vettel, who won the championship. Fernando Alonso, who finished in second. Lewis Hamilton, who finished fourth that year. That's three. You've got Nico Hülkenberg, who made his debut that season. So that's four.
And he took a year out.
He took a year out the year afterwards because he was demoted to a test driver and replaced for Pastor Maldonado. Shit's not kind, people. That's it. There was four. Only four drivers are still around from that grid. And there were 27 guys who took part in a race that season. In fact, as I mentioned, nobody did less than three races that year. Even Christian Kleen did three races in 2010. Yes. Christian Kleen did three. Sako Nakamoto did seven. So, DRS has lasted longer than, like, basically 75% of the 2010 championship grid in the season it was first introduced. See? I'm good at filling in time, people. But, yeah, only four dudes are still on that grid from the 2010 season. You probably would have had Nico Rosberg if he hadn't retired so early, but, you know, shit. That's...
Yeah, and we'd probably have Robert Kubica if he got signed instead of Sergei Sorokin.
Don't anger the Polish community about that one, King. They're already mad enough as it is. But, yeah, like, I look at F1, a sport that has changed, that basically has major changes every 5 years or so. I'm not sure you can describe anything in it as artificial, but, you know, that's just me, I guess.
Yeah, if you describe something as artificial in Formula One, then everything is artificial.
Right, because it's... Right.
Like this artificial television graphics, which were... They're growing on me. I like the idea that just like, okay, let's just do what MotoGP does, but do it with a little worse typeface.
A little worse typeface.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun because like Dorna's like production is like probably the best in the business when it comes to MotoGP. They are so good at that.
Yo, Dorna's got TV graphics for trackside fauna.
Boy. It is a thing of beauty. But yes, let's talk about a little bit about Liberty Media as well, because this was their first race as official owners. They made a variety of presentation and graphical changes. You know, this is always going to cause dissension because we look at F1 and change a bit like opening the toilet and seeing a turd in the middle of it. It's we don't like it very much. And I guess you could say this is another example of that because...
No, I wouldn't say so. Like, what, this is the fourth time that the graphics package has changed in the last decade?
That's a good point, actually. It has they have changed it around a lot, like, but,
Yeah, my only gripe with the graphics package is with some teams like Red Bull and Sauber, where they have like color indicators to point out like driver numbers and everything like that, and they're against a gray background. It is hell for the colorblind.
Yeah, like no one knows what color contrast is.
Yeah, it wasn't all that bad apart from the Red Bull owned teams, because like the dark blue completely clashes with like the obsidian black you had in the background. I sound like a Bob Ross painting talking and like describing colors like this, but it's like the black blatantly clashed with the blue, and it wasn't good. It wasn't so bad with some of the other teams, like for example Renault's yellow. It worked fine, but like it's you're right, like that is going to be a nightmare for colorblind. You know, for colorblind viewers, and it was a blatant clash, and it didn't work. Yes.
As my friend Alice once put it as well, I don't know if we need to have the safety car graphic for major incidents. Because that seems a little bit unnecessary. Like, Romain Grosjean's car is stopped at the road. That's not really a major incident. When I think of major incident, I think of, take it back to Tets 2003, where Paul Page literally described Kenny Brack's car going into the catch fence and impacting at 206 Gs as a major incident.
I think it's an issue where, like, no one actually thought of the situations that graphic would be used. They just assumed any incident that involved a full safety car would involve a car being written off.
I'm guessing they were trying to make it idiot-proof for new viewers. Like, you know... call it a major incident without really thinking about the context of F1 and what a major incident actually is. I don't think it's a bad bit of logic to think in that way, but it just looked a little bit out of place for F1.
Over dramatization.
We never do that in F1. Never. Though
we should also talk about the new camera angles.
Well, why don't we talk about the old camera angles? Because this is really my only gripe about the halo, because I'm used to it at this point. I think it looks nice, especially when it blends with the colors of the car. But damn it, they really should have thought about how this would affect the camera angles that they already have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the T-cam, it's pretty much unaffected, but the over-the-shoulder cam is dead.
Yeah.
What was it? They had to have their designs in for regarding the cars and where the cameras were going to be, like, and then a month later they went, by the way, we're doing a halo.
But the thing is, you could still have the camera pods there, but just don't put cameras in them.
Yeah, they cut out a hole in the front of the halo for this, but nobody actually elected to use it.
I'm telling you, they are missing a trick with a swiveling camera rotating around the circumference of the halo.
You make a good point there. But, yeah, like, they did not use the over-the-shoulder camera, I think, after Friday free practice. I think after that, they knew it was bad, and they just stopped using it after that point. As our friend of the show, Elizabeth Worth, pointed out on Jalopnik, which she writes for now. Congrats, Lizzie! As they pointed out, like, these teams choose where they're going to put their cameras months before the actual season takes place. So, yeah, this was kind of, like, you would never have guessed this. This wasn't just a spontaneous thing for the TV broadcast. This was planned months in advance.
Yeah, like, if...
Which, by the way, with all the months in planning in advance that went into this decision, but you can't get your over-the-top streaming service working for the first race of the season?
Uh-oh.
Like, honestly, I think this shows, like, what Liberty is not in control of, because I'm pretty sure if this whole, you know, big graphics change, big everything coming into place this year, if Liberty and the FOM had the choice to tell the FIA, no, don't implement the halo this year, just put it off till next year, they would have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it was already set in stone before they bought the sport out, basically. So they were never going to get that one overturned. That was already hardwired in. I think was it from 2016 it was hardwired in. That 2018 was going to be the year, basically. So yeah, there was nothing they could have done about that one, unfortunately. Yeah, the shoulder cam is dead. It was awful. It blocked views. It blocked visions. It was bad.
Many a meme was made.
Many a Twitter like was harvested on Twitter from people that were complaining about it, because that's what we do on F1 Twitter. We just complain about shit and hope people like it.
Though we did get to see more extensive use of the nose cam on the car.
That was very nice. They're still showing that off right now with Raikkonen, because they have shown off how close he came to passing Hamilton on the opening lap. That was a nice touch. You know?
Brian Tyler's new Formula One theme. I hadn't heard it before the race, and people had had strong opinions about this, saying this is not the Fleetwood Mac or the Apollo 440 or whatever it was they'd been used to listening to before the start of an F1 race. They're just like, I don't like
it's
this.
Not the chain.
I never actually heard it. it's actually good, and it's better when it's set to pictures.
Yes. And again, this is not replacing any of the broadcaster's introduction. This is the new intro to the world feed.
Yeah, so if you're not a fan of Just Drive, well, can't help you there.
Go and trust me, I know a lot of F1 fans that are sick of Just Drive already. I know that for a fact. Sorry, go on, Zoe.
Channel 4, because they were doing their highlight version, didn't have that.
Yeah, because there's no world feed.
Uh-huh, it's not the world feed, so... Anyone who's only seen, who only watched the highlights on Channel 4 haven't actually seen it with the, like, in regards to it being on for a start of a live coverage. So, you may get a few more reactions there if they haven't already watched it on YouTube.
And also, one last point that I think we need to make here. Did anybody's enjoyment of this race, was it positively or negatively impacted by the lack of grid girls?
As Lee McKenzie politely pointed out to Nico Hülkenberg, he managed to find a spot on the grid.
Like, I honestly did not notice until the national anthem, and the only thing that pointed me out that something was a bit off, that there were still like promotional models for an airline there. I forget which one. It was one of the Gulf airlines.
Yeah, and in fairness, the promotional models, like, they get paid by the company to be there on a consistent basis. It's not just like a one gig a year kind of deal, as was the grid girl role. Which, by the way, the grid kids are awesome out there. They're doing great. I'm proud of you kids.
Yeah, you kids are doing well. You guys didn't break any rules.
No,
that I know.
Nobody let off a stink bomb in the Mercedes pit garage. Damn it. They were all very well. I saw it on Will Buxton's paddock passes and seeing pictures. They were getting spoiled out there with paddock passes. Did anybody see the little girl that met Nico Rosberg in the paddock?
No.
It was so sweet, where it's like, the kid's mum is like, yeah, say hi to Nico Rosberg, it's over there. And then, like, she shows him a little program, and then Nico goes, oh, I used to be in that car once upon a time. it's like, oh, Nico, I adore that man. and he did great on Sky Sports for what it's worth as well. Exactly how I thought he was going to be. Rational. Witty. Had great bounce with Kravitz as well. He was great. Definitely worth pointing that out. But that was the good side of the media stuff. I suspect the Americans among us here are about to tail off on ESPN's first Formula One broadcast.
Chris, buddy.
Yeah,
Chris,
yeah.
You did wake up.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Okay, oh, there's man.
There's no time. There's no time for this. So I'm about to try to explain what happened with this in real time. So 12:30 p.m. Eastern time. Excuse me, 12:30 a.m. Eastern time. Formula One's pre-race show on the grid. This is essentially pre-race stuff. Martin's grid walk. Everything's like that. And we get greeted with static camera shot looking out of turn 8 in the approach.
And we also
cut to commercial.
No audio.
Deafening silence.
Cut to commercial, cut to commercial. We cut back to the same shot of turn number 8. It is very awkward. Now you can hear, like, wild sound, but nothing's going on. Nothing's going on. And then, all of a sudden, somewhere in Bristol, Connecticut, someone is panicking. Somebody is absolutely shitting not just a brick, but they're goddamn pooping out an entire brick wall at this point. And they decide it's time to cut away to a rerun of ESPN, the magazine's E60, the Dominant 20, the recap show, which you just watched before tuning into this. And they cut away to this for a good 5 to 10 minutes.
Seriously?
It was a trip. It was a trip.
I didn't even know this was a thing. I know the Americans weren't keen on this, but I didn't know exactly the context as to why it was so bad. But that's terrible.
That
yeah, the bottom line read that Formula One's Australian Grand Prix on the grid is experiencing technical difficulties at the moment. Mm.
That's what led to my tweet. You can't complain about ESPN's F1 coverage if there is no F1 coverage.
Woke.
Which I was still getting notifications for the day after the race.
Was that the worst of it?
No.
I think that might have been the worst of it. I just want to add some perspective from mutual friend of the show, Sean Kelly, who, of course, used to work for Speed Channel and then later NBCSN before, you know, the broadcast rights were essentially resold on the cheap to ESPN this offseason.
Quote unquote sold. That implies that there was an exchange of currency for a product.
Yes, what they're doing, what they essentially saw was them looking at the pictures, seeing nothing happening. This is the shot that they normally saw, NBCSN and Speed Channel before them. That static camera shot was what they saw when they're off the air. So whenever they're, like, taking commercial breaks or, you know, preparing studio-made pre-race content, which you don't have now, they looked at it, assumed something was wrong, bailed out. And then only then did they realize, oh, yeah, this is actual content. We need to show this. I mean, at least we got Martin's grid walk in.
Yay.
Yeah, we got the grid walk in, yeah.
That's a plus.
But yeah, it was kind of a noticeable gaping hole that they didn't make any of their own content. Because, you know, on ESPN Sports, during the time that they would do a grid walk, you know, with Will Buxton, either before or after that, they would also intercut, you know, the other events from the weekend in case people weren't there to see qualifying or any of the practice sessions. It was basically, in their race broadcast, they fit in all of the weekend's events for those who couldn't keep up.
Right. Well, we didn't get that on this broadcast then, clearly.
No, it was just Sky Sports.
Just Sky Sports. Oh dear.
And not just Sky Sports, but Sky Sports with awkwardly jammed in commercial breaks, because again, this is basic cable. This is not on the Sky Sports model. You are not paying an extra subscription fee on top of your cable package to get this. So there was not a chance in hell. I know we kind of wanted it, but there was no way we were getting commercial-free races. And seeing it applied was like, oh, this is very awkward. He was in mid-sentence.
Ugh.
And then they cut to commercial. Remember, Chris, you remember at St. Pete where ABC missed the restart from the safety car?
There's a reason why they're called always bad coverage.
They did it again! Disney-owned properties are 2 for 2 in missing restarts.
Thanks, Disney. Sigh. I find it's like bizarro world where, like, F1's doing all the wrong things with broadcasting in America, while IndyCar is doing the complete opposite with their recent announcement that they're moving to NBC.
Yeah, which again leads to my earlier point. Formula One TV should have been ready by this point.
Would have helped.
Though I think it was our friend Elizabeth again, pointing out jokingly, hey, the coverage, it's almost like they wanted the coverage to be so bad so they'd make people sign up for F1 TV.
Oh.
I knew well and truly that it was going to be, you know, not as well put together as like a, and like an actual domestically produced broadcast. Like, say what you will about NBCSN, that they had too many commercials. At least they would have told you, given you a heads up ahead of time, they were cutting ahead of commercials.
Yeah.
And they would produce their own original content and try to work around the parameters of what they were given.
Mm-hmm.
This just felt like it was a drag and drop broadcast.
Certainly felt that way. Like, just broadcasting by numbers, basically. And that's a shame, because I think the US audience was expecting more, even if you're quite cynical against ESPN. I had a hunch when they announced they were just going to basically lift Sky Sports' coverage. I was like, that's probably not ideal. I didn't think they would, like, literally just take Sky Sports' coverage and then just bolster their own ads over the top and not thinking about the context of how to put together a decent F1 broadcast. That's probably not ideal. But, I did, again, obviously being British, you wouldn't realise how bad it was, but I didn't realise it was that bad.
So,
it was wild.
Yeah, like, I really think that ESPN are literally treading water until they get their own over-the-top service where they can, you know, stream it on that platform without any ads.
And apparently, like, yours as well was, like, way behind as well, like, in terms of the actual live race itself.
Yeah, so, basically on Watch ESPN, or ESPN3, the streaming service, it was about, I would say, 90 seconds behind the actual broadcast on ESPN2.
And if you're following that on social media, you got no chance. You're going to get that shit spoiled. Like, that's right. That's bad. Like, that 90 seconds is bad. I mean,
That's a lap. You're a lap behind.
Yeah, that's bad. Like, I've watched, like, the darts before on Now TV, which is Sky service over here for streaming. And they're about 30 seconds back. And I think that's bad if you're on social media at the same time. This was worse. Like that's clearly, like, two, maybe three times worse. That's not ideal, to say the least.
And I say that they're basically treading water because ESPN Plus, their over-top cable-free subscription service, will be available at some point this year for $5 a month.
Hopefully ASAP, because that would only help. But hey, F1 TV, if you're in America.
Yeah.
Soon, maybe.
Soon.
Even
though they've been releasing details about F1 TV that there'll be options to actually turn off the commentary and literally just have natural sounds.
This means you can make up your own commentary now.
Yep, that means yes. You don't have to listen to the commentary provided, which will be David Croft and Martin Brundle.
Which, to be fair, are not as bad as they used to be.
Yeah, they're not.
If you're still not a fan of Croft and Brundle, you can just put it on mute.
Yeah.
Like at some point, me and you can need to commentate a Grand Prix together. And just put it on YouTube and find a way to get around the obvious potential copyright situations. That would be fun.
It would be like Riff Tracks, but for Formula One.
Hey, you know, maybe we don't have to put it out on YouTube.
It's true.
Because we have other ways we can get stuff to our fans who are willing to give us a certain, you know, amount of contributions for our services.
That's an idea. Do you feel like me and Lewis has always kind of had the idea for Estoril 2006, like one of the best MotoGP races ever. Just a thought.
Hey, if you need a stat boy, I'm there.
Stat boy. Like, I remember we actually Tony Ryan King Reale, clearly. I remember doing that like in 2013 for the Canadian Grand Prix on YouTube back in the day with Scott Woodwiss, and one of the earliest guests we had on the podcast from back in the day. That was fun. It really was. A couple of other observations to take away from the Grand Prix itself.
Oh, Valtteri, what happened? If you missed it, Valtteri Bottas, of course he wrecked in qualifying. He started 15th, so you're thinking, oh, he's in a Mercedes. He should have no problem making his way up to a podium finish. He was a solid 8th. He made no ground up at the start. He really only got back into points contention midway through the race, I believe, after the safety car. And he made no inroads on a train of cars led by Fernando Alonso, then Max Verstappen and Nico Hülkenberg ahead of him.
Yeah, it's almost like his car was cut in half 24 hours before that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, just... Oh boy, this wasn't ideal. I mean, like, according to people close to Mercedes, they were expecting Val even after having to start 15th, after not only the crash, but also a 5-place grip penalty for a place in his gearbox. They were still apparently aiming for top 6. Val finished up 8th. And he's had to go into other part of power unit components already as well because of the damage that they took during that wreck as well. That's not a good start for Val. Not at all. Yeah.
It's a great start for an orange car. We're at number 14, baby. Fernando Alonso's back on board.
Who turned RJ O'Connell into urinating tree for a second there? Like, holy shit.
Watch Here's to you. Thunder review.
Here's to you, the biggest lol cow of the offseason. But yes, we haven't talked about this enough, but Fernando Alonso, P5.
He's back! He's back, baby!
Why have we unleashed the Alonso stan in the background again? Somebody get RJ all the way in the sin bin. All the way.
Now, before you take me out there, I just want to say, real quick, shout-outs to the wonderful sporty lifestyle products at Kimoa. Shout-outs as well to the entire Spanish Formula One community. Shout-outs to everybody who's been with this journey for the last 16 seasons.
Shout out to Iron Brew.
Yeah, shout out to Iron Brew.
Has anyone got a tranquilizer dart?
But though, I should also note the front page of Marca, you know, the Spanish sports newspaper, Monday morning was Havelto. He's back with Fernando Alonso on the front cover of the paper.
A man who's won 33 Grand Prix is getting front page news over finishing 5th. What the hell is wrong with you people?
Anytime Alonso finishes 5th is front page news. It's the Alon 5-0 effect.
Get out, all of you. Get the fuck out.
Hey, I'm just stating what happened.
Yep, King, you can stay.
I'm not the one making
the
jokes here.
King, you can...
I don't tell jokes, I make factual statements. Please don't pay attention to the fact that he was losing several seconds per lap over the cars in front of him.
Shut up.
It's fine.
I'm going to javelin you into the sin bin in a minute, RJ. Jesus Christ. It's like, yes, this is the thing. It's like...
Sin bin's good, we have fudge here.
Give me that fudge.
No, you're all. You need a sin bin gold pass.
Sin bin gold pass.
Fine.
Presented by Kimoa.
Okay. As RJ like puts an asterisk just then, like Fernando was out here acting like this is gonna be like the start of like the rise of McLaren to challenging for wins again. This was effectively half a Grand Prix after the safety car came in. He finished 20 seconds behind Daniel Ricciardo in 4th. Like, McLaren, that was a good performance, but you are still a gaping chasm behind the best of the Renault teams. Like that, you are still way, way off where you needed to be. And according to people in the know, the performance of the car to be able to pass around Albert Park was apparently 1.8 seconds. Your car needed to be almost 2 seconds a lap quicker to effectively pass somebody around here. That's why Max Verstappen, behind, had no chance of getting past him.
Would you then say, then, that a more accurate benchmark of what McLaren are right now is Stoffel Vandoorne in 9th?
Yeah. Look, they should be getting points. Like, this... Like, they closed out the year with three straight points finishes. Like, right now, it's a situation where it's like, congratulations, McLaren, you're exactly how you closed out the end of last year. But, okay, the fifth was a little bit freaky, but we forget that that only matched Fernando's best performance in since he's come back to McLaren. He had a fifth at COTA in 2016. So,
and again, we do also have to take into account they probably finished two positions higher than they should have because of the Haas double retirement.
I think also with how testing went with Toro Rosso looking quite good and them doing the least amount of testing because they were having all these issues. I think as much as they were saying, like, oh, we're aiming for this, we're aiming for that, I think they weren't expecting... I still think they weren't quite expecting a fifth.
Were they?
No.
I mean, McLaren have always had a very self-inflated value of how good they actually think they are. I don't think that they would rule out a top five finish if everything went to plan, especially if you believe what Fernando is saying. Because I don't know how much of that is Fernando just being a PR hype man and how much of that Fernando genuinely believes. But I don't know. But McLaren of all, like, they seem to think they're still like the Manchester United of Formula One, but I got nothing for you on this one. I think the ninth of Stoffel is probably a more realistic baseline than fifth, because I think Haas and Renault are comfortably faster than them in normal conditions. They were just the ultimate benefactors of Haas having a double DNF in front of them, and the nature of Albert Park meaning that the faster car behind him in Max Verstappen had zero chance of overtaking him. But hey, that's Formula One for you. You make the best of the luck you're given half the time. Suck it. All of those people who VSEs that complained about Vettel winning that race. Right.
Sometimes you can overcome your bad fortune, like Carlos Sainz did, who ran off the track and then almost had a reversal of fortune in his crash helmet during the middle of a race. It still gutted out a 10th place result as his Renault teammate Nico Hülkenberg, free of the chains of feminism, gritted out another solid 7th place finish. Good day for
But Rito. How on earth, like, I love that Lee McKenzie's had a blatant shots fired moment while doing the Channel 4 coverage where he described Nico Hülkenberg as, oh my god, it's a miracle he was able to find his spot on the grid without a grid goal there to guide him. And I was like, just when you thought it couldn't get any worse, Nico Hülkenberg doubled down on his stance on grid goals when he wrote a lengthy piece for the Bild in Germany about describing the situation as having F1 without grid goals is like having Tom without Jerry.
Oh my god.
What was Tom's aim through the whole show?
Apart from the
disturbing last episode where they both stand up in front of a railroad track just to get off.
I just...
Was that it?
Yo, the ending to Tom and Jerry was one of the most disturbing things ever.
Yeah.
It's up there with Roseanne. How the hell is Dan still alive?
Yeah.
I don't know. Retcon. It was all a dream.
Fun fact, there is a very fun Nostalgia Critic editorial video about that very scene in Tom and Jerry. I highly recommend you go and see it. But, yes.
It takes you right into the mindset of any Alonso fan in racing. Because you can't have the over-the-top enthusiasm without the over-the-top self-deprecation.
But you can have it without the over-the-top broadcasting service.
Apparently.
What service?
Speaking of lip service, King wanted to dig out his Autosport ratings because he's the only one who has plus accounts, you heathen. Tell us more.
Okay, so again, Autosport has returned with their, you know, race-by-race driver ratings of Grand Prix drivers. But this year, there's a twist. This year, if you are an Autosport Plus subscriber, you can also vote and contribute to the user rating.
Who thought that was a good idea?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, they obviously took inspiration from Metacritic's user ratings of video games, which of course are a very real and accurate statement of how good a game actually is, and not subject to review bombs where people will just vote, downvote en masse on a game that they don't like because somebody said something controversial that they don't like in the press.
Or hashtag fuck Konami. Right, so... But, King... What have you been able to make of not only Autosport's ratings for the weekend, but also what the fans thought?
Ooh, there is some differences. They're not massive, because, you know, people like to toe the company line, even though, like, they're not a part of this company. Mm-hmm. But I think we should start where we should start, at the top, with our Grand Prix winner, Sebastian Vettel.
Yay!
Autosport gave him an 8.
Fair.
The fans gave him a 7.6, which is, yeah, it's fair.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. It rounds up to an 8. That's fine.
Yeah, it's like, good to note that, you know, a little bit lower. Okay. Lewis Hamilton, Autosport gave him a 9. That's very bold of them.
I can understand that.
The fans gave him 8.5.
Oh, that shocks me.
The fans were less stanny about the whole thing than Hamilton's actual writers were for Autosport. That is alarming, in my opinion. Holy shit.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
Yep. Next driver on the list, Kimi Raikkonen.
Oh, boy.
I want to say Autosport gave him a 7 and the fans gave him a 10.8.
Seems about right.
You'd be incorrect. Autosport gave him an 8.
Nice.
The users gave him an 8.1. Just a little bit higher, but
yeah,
8.1.
Seems reasonable to me.
Yes.
Okay, we got next driver up. Daniel Ricciardo also gets an 8.
Sure.
The fans give him 7.9.
Okay. Yeah, again, nothing too crazy there.
Yeah, it's starting to actually even out more as time goes on.
Hang on. This means Alonso's next, isn't it?
Yep, Lonzo.
Uh-oh. Duck and cover.
Lonzo gets an 8 from Autosport, 8.1 from the fans.
Oh, that's actually kind of reasonable. Damn it!
That's not high enough, damn it.
That's not high.
You shut your mouth!
Okay. Max Verstappen gets a 6 from Autosport.
Yeah, okay.
5.4 from the fans.
What?!
Clearly, Autosport is not appealing to the Dutch fan base. F1.
No, like, the Dutch clearly haven't heard of Autosport yet. That's my only logical explanation for this rating.
Let's see. Yeah, next driver up, Nico Hülkenberg, gets an 8 from Autosport.
Okay.
7.3 from the fans.
Unfortunately, it would have been an 8.5 if it wasn't for the fact that the Grid Girl Fraternity also voted in this poll.
Next up.
It's fine.
Yeah. Valtteri Bottas is up next. He gets a 5 from Autosport.
Yikes.
4.3 from the fans.
Double yikes.
Don't tell Chris.
Don't tell Chris.
Not Chris. Cook. I mean Chris.
Cook. Yeah, like Cook just pulled out what's left of his hair. Chris.
Okay. Stoffel Van Dorn gets a 7 from Autosport. 6.5 from the fans.
Stoffel Van Dorn is serviceable. That's about.
Also, happy birthday, Stoffel. 26 today.
Yay!
Yep. Carlos Sainz at Renault. Same exact scores from both Autosport and the fans.
6?
Yep, 7 from Autosport, 6.5 from the fans.
Okay. Yeah, that's about right.
Got a grade on a curb. He was dealing with the nausea. His drink bottle was spiked.
Yep.
But he shouldn't be, like, telling them they're sick. He, There's nothing the team can do if you were listening to David Coulthard go on his tirade.
Okay. Mr. Coulthard, I think it's time to have a nap. Have a little lie down.
Have a nap on top of his bed of zero world championships.
Okay, so the biggest contrast so far is for Sergio Perez, who gets an 8 from Autosport.
What?
And a 6.9 from the fans.
Nice.
8?
Yeah.
I get.
Force India were nowhere.
I guess they're compensating for that the Force India's been trash pretty much all season so far, including testing, and Perez probably snuck it into 11th.
Yep, quote from the review, he outpaced Ocon in both qualifying and the race, and so did about as much could be expected with the equipment.
Fair enough.
Yep, his teammate Esteban Ocon gets a 6 from Autosport, 5.7 from the fans. The seeming trend is the fans don't think highly about anybody.
The fans are just as cynical and bitter as I am. I'm here for it.
Sweet.
Everybody gets a 0. Hamilton, 0. Vettel, 0. Alonso, 0.
Alonso, 0.4.
Kimi gets a -1 because he has to be cool.
He's a hipster.
Charles Leclerc, in his debut with Sauber, gets a 7 from Autosport and a 7 from the fans.
That's actually reasonable. Charles Leclerc was pulling above his weight in the equipment that he had.
Seems about right.
Lance Stroll at Williams in his first sophomore outing gets a 5 from Autosport and a 4.5 from the fans.
Yikes. That's painful.
Okay. Yeah, Brendan Hartley, he gets a 6 from Autosport, 5.6 from the fans.
Floor damage, kind of an NA, really. Next.
Yeah. Romain Grosjean, 9 from Autosport, 8.4 from the fans.
8.4, okay. Yeah, I can agree with a 9. That seems about right.
His teammate, Kevin Magnussen, 10 from Autosport, 9.3 from the fans.
They gave K-Mag a perfect score. Wow.
Yeah.
You had said that somebody got in a 10 and you had told me that it wasn't going to be Kevin Magnussen. I knew it.
I had to, like, try to deceive you a bit. I could just give it away.
Oh. Makes sense.
Oh, you swerved me.
Magnussen was robbed of driver of the day easily because of that. Yep. Yeah, that's perfectly fine in my opinion. Magnussen was outstanding this weekend.
No, the fans who didn't rate him a 10, where are you?
I want you to give an explanation why you catch these hands.
It's Ron Dennis, 1, Nico Hülkenberg, 2. I think that's everybody that downvoted.
And we got 3 drivers left to score. Pierre Gasly gets a 6 from Autosport, 5.4 from the fans.
Okay.
Marcus Ericsson, he gets an 8 from Autosport, 6.8 from the fans.
Makes sense. He outqualified Leclerc and was doing all right until the power steering failed.
Yo, them fans though, 6.8.
They're all of the Leclerc fangirl fraternity.
And last but not least, Sergei Sorokin, 5 from Autosport, 4.5 from the fans.
One of them being Marks and Spencer's for losing one of their sandwich bags.
Yo, so yeah, both the Williams drivers get the lowest scores with double fives from Autosport. And double 4.5 from the fans.
And Haas got a 9 and a 10. They averaged out on a 9.5.
Yep.
Oh, God. They could have finished on the podium, couldn't they?
Sigh.
Yeah, if the cars fell the right way and they were able to catch Raikkonen, which looked highly probable, yeah, they would have had a podium.
Sigh. I think this about does it here, folks, doesn't it?
Yep, anything else anybody wants to talk about before we step away?
Clint Bowyer won.
Oh, yeah. The snow day race.
So
yeah, we recorded this race on a Monday. We had
this race?
Martinsville snowed
really?
Out on Sunday.
Nice job.
And
But yeah, what happened at Martinsville? Why couldn't they race on the Sunday?
It snowed. It snowed a lot. It snowed a lot on Saturday night.
Yeah, this was Clint Bowyer's first win since October 2012, and I actually have four little fun facts about this win of his. Since Clint Bowyer's last win, or around that time, the iPhone 5 was released 1 month before that time. Snapchat, at that point, was 1 year old. Instagram had just turned two, and Windows 8 still wasn't available to the general public.
Fuck me. I feel old just thinking about that.
1,991 days since Clint Bowyer's last win.
This according to at Drunk Brian France on Twitter, or as he is known around the office, just Mr. France.
Mm-hmm. Mr. France with the drinking problem. Oh, dear. Only congratulations, Clint.
And the Camping World Truck Race earlier that day, today, was also won by John Hunter Nemechek.
Nice.
Ooh, yes.
Everybody.
I believe that. That about covers it. I mean, we've hit all the high points from what was a race that will probably go down the books as aging very badly. It's very good to take in terms of its race highlight format. I wouldn't necessarily sit down and go out of your way to watch the whole thing back.
I wouldn't either. I gave it a 6 out of 10 on the day because I think it's the sort of race where it's going to be much, much better live to see it. In an archived library on its own, no. Just no. This is going to age terribly. And the safety car was the best and the worst thing to happen to that race simultaneously. And yeah, it's still masked a lot of the issues that this sport has got. Conservative strategies with not a lot of wriggle room for unpredictability, and general lack of overtaking. Again, we've been here before with F1, but then it's going to be on what it fixed that. Hopefully a little bit more race-friendly circuits like Bahrain next weekend. Hopefully we'll do a little bit better with that going forward. But I personally wouldn't recommend this one. The highlight video on YouTube, I think, is definitely enough on.
I definitely wouldn't recommend Sebastian Vettel's hair.
No. That was...
That thing's got to grow in, and even then, it's not even a guarantee that that's going to look.
That was basically a fade where they told him 3 on the top and then 0.5 on the sides.
Say no more, fam.
Say no more, fam. Like, again, like Seb, bit of advice from me. Go to a black barber's. They would never let you leave the building like that. We have too much pride for that sort of shit. That was not good. Shall we say. And that will just about do it on this episode of Motorsport 101. Places you can find us one more time. We're on youtube.com/Motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter @Motorsport_101. Our personal handles one more time @Harris101HD, @RyanEricKing, @RJOConnell, @WeeZoe, and @CDeHarde. CDeHarde. Good at spelling me. And if you really, really like us, of course, you can back us on Patreon, patreon.com/Motorsport101. Don't forget, $5 gets you early access to both this show and Bike Live. As I said, episode 51 went live this past weekend. A Qatar review and a BSP 2018 season preview. That season kicks off this weekend. Episode 52 will be out most likely towards the end of this week. And that will be a review of the World Superbikes in Thailand. So check that out if you haven't already by the time this goes out. So, until next time, from me, Andre Harrison, from Ryan King, from Zoe Hamilton, from RJ O'Connell, and from Chris, I've been Andre Harrison. Thank you very much for listening, and I will catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Alonso back, y'all!
Bye.
RJ, you're in the sin bin.
Winner. And a winner is you.
Don't worry, there's fudge here.